This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled The Kingdom of Childhood. This is Lecture 6, given in Torquay on August 18, 1924. We will now continue our discussion by speaking of certain matters of method. And here I would like to say that in these few lectures, only general principles can be given. You can also study the Waldorf School seminar courses, and with the indications you have received here, you will be able to understand them thoroughly. We must get a clear picture of the child between the change of teeth and puberty. We must know that in the years before the change of teeth, the inherited characteristics are the determining factors, and that the child receives from its father and mother a model body that is completely thrown aside by the time of the change of teeth. For during the first seven-year period, it is being replaced by a new body. The change of teeth, indeed, is only the external expression of this replacing of the old body by a new one, upon which the soul and spirit are now at work. I have already told you that the spirit soul is strong. Then, during the school period, from the change of teeth to puberty, children may go through great changes regarding the qualities they formerly possessed. If the individuality is weak, the result will be a body that very closely resembles the inherited characteristics. And with the children of school age, we will still have to take into account deeply rooted resemblances to the parents or grandparents. We must be clear in our minds that the independent activity of the etheric body only really begins at the change of teeth. The etheric body, in the first 7 years, has to put forward all the independent activity of which it is capable to build up the second physical body. Thus, this etheric body is preeminently an inward artist in the child in the first 7 years. It is a modeler, a sculptor. And this modeling force applied to the physical body by the etheric body becomes free, emancipates itself with the change of teeth at the seventh year. It can then work as an activity of soul. This is why the child has an impulse to model forms or to paint them. For the first 7 years of life, the etheric body has been carrying out modeling and painting within the physical body. Now that it has nothing further to do regarding the physical body, or at least not as much as before, it wants to carry its activity outside. If therefore you, as teachers, have a wide knowledge of the forms that occur in the human organism, and consequently know what kind of forms children like to mold out of plastic material or to paint in color, then you will be able to give them the right guidance. But you yourselves must have a kind of artistic conception of the human organism. It is therefore of real importance for the teacher to try and do some modeling as well, for the teacher's training today includes nothing of this sort. You will see that however much you have learned about the lung or the liver, or let us say the complicated ramifications of the vascular system, you will not know as much as if you were to copy the whole thing in wax or plasticine. For then you suddenly begin to have quite a different kind of knowledge of the organs, of the lung, for instance. For as you know, you must form one half of the lung differently from the other half. The lung is not symmetrical. One half is clearly divided into two segments, the other into three. Before you learn this, you are constantly forgetting which is left and which is right. But when you work out these curious asymmetrical forms in wax or plasticine, then you get the feeling that you could not change round left and right any more than you could put the heart on the right-hand side of the body. You also get the feeling that the lung has its right place in the organism, with its own particular form, and if you mold it rightly, you will feel that it is inevitable for the human lung to come gradually into an upright position in standing and walking. If you model the lung forms of animals, you will see, or you will feel, from the touch, that the lung of an animal lies horizontally, and so it is with other organs. You yourselves, therefore, should really try to learn anatomy by modeling the organs, so that you can then get the children to model or to paint something that is in no way an imitation of the human body, but only expresses certain forms. For you will find that the child has an impulse to make forms that are related to the inner human organism. You may get some quite extraordinary experiences in this respect in the course of your lessons. We have introduced lessons on simple physiology in the school, and especially in the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th grades, as this is obviously an integral part of the Waldorf School method. Our children paint from the very beginning, and from a certain age they also do carving. Now, if you simply let the children work freely, it is very interesting to see that when you have explained about the human being to them, the lung, for instance, then out of themselves they begin to model such forms as the lung or something similar. It is really interesting to see how the child forms things out of its own being. That is why it is essential for you to take up this plastic method and to find ways and means of making faithful reproductions of the forms of the human organs exactly in wax or plasticine, even, if you like, as our children often do, in mud, for if you have nothing else that is very good material to work with. This is an inner urge, an inner longing of the etheric body to be at work in modeling or painting. So you can very easily turn this impulse and longing to account by deriving the letters of the alphabet out of the forms that the child paints or models. For then you will be really molding your teaching out of a knowledge of the human being. This is what must be done at this stage. Now to proceed. The human being consists not only of the physical body and etheric body, which latter is emancipated and free at the 7th year, but also of the astral body and ego. What happens to the astral body of the child between the 7th and 14th year? It does not really come to its full activity till puberty. Only then is it working completely within the human organism. But while the etheric body, between birth and the change of teeth, is in a certain sense being drawn out of the physical body and becoming independent, the astral body is gradually being drawn inward between the 7th and 14th year. And when it has been drawn right in, it is no longer merely loosely connected with the physical and etheric bodies, but permeates them completely. Then the human being has arrived at the moment of puberty, of sexual maturity. With the boy, one can see by the change of voice that the astral body is now quite within the larynx. With the girl, one can see by the development of other organs, breast organs, and so on, that the astral body has now been completely drawn in. The astral body finds its way slowly into the human body from all sides. The lines and directions it follows are the nerve fibers. The astral body comes in along the nerve fibers, from without, inward. Here, it begins to fill out the whole body from the outer environment, from the skin, and gradually draws itself together inside. Before this time, it is a kind of loose cloud in which the child lives. Then it draws itself together, lays firm hold upon all the organs, and if we may put it somewhat crudely, it unites itself chemically with the organism, with all the tissues of the physical and etheric body. But something very strange happens here. When the astral body presses inward from the periphery of the body, it makes its way along the nerves, which then unite in the spine, and there's a drawing. Above is the head. It also forces its way slowly through the head nerves, crawls along the nerves toward the central organs, toward the spinal cord, bit by bit, into the head, gradually coming in and filling it all out. He's referring to the astral body still. What we must chiefly consider in this connection is how the breathing works in with the whole nervous system. Indeed, this working together of the breathing with the whole nervous system is something very special in the human organism. As teacher and educator, one should have the very finest feeling for it. Only then will one be able to teach rightly. Here, then, the air enters the body, distributes itself, goes up through the spinal column, there's a drawing, spreads out in the brain, touches the nerve fibers everywhere, goes down again, and pursues paths by which it can then be ejected as carbon dioxide. So we find the nervous system being constantly worked upon by the in-breathed air that distributes itself, goes up through the spinal column, spreads out again, becomes permeated with carbon, goes back again, and is breathed out. It is only in the course of the first school period, between the changing of teeth and puberty, that the astral body carries this whole process of breathing, passing along the nerve fibers, right into the physical body. So that during this time, when the astral body is gradually finding its way into the physical body, with the help of the air breathed in, it is playing upon something that is stretched across like strings of an instrument in the center of the body, that is, upon the spinal column. Our nerves are really a kind of lyre, a musical instrument, an inner musical instrument that resounds up into the head. This process begins, of course, before the change of teeth, but at that time, the astral body is only loosely connected with the physical body. It is between the change of teeth and puberty that the astral body really begins to play upon the single nerve fibers with the in-breathed air, like a violin bow on the strings. You will be fostering all this if you give the child plenty of singing. You must have a feeling that while singing, the child is a musical instrument. You must stand before your class to whom you are teaching singing or music with the clear feeling, every child is a musical instrument, and inwardly feels a kind of well-being in the sound. For you see, sound is brought about by the particular way the breath is circulated. That is inner music. To begin with, in the first 7 years of life, the child learns everything by imitation. But now the child should learn to sing out of the inward joy experienced in building up melodies and rhythms. To show you the kind of inner picture you should have in your mind when you stand before your class in a singing lesson, I should like to use a comparison that may seem a little crude, but which will make clear to you what I mean. I do not know how many of you, but I hope most, have at some time been able to watch a herd of cows who have fed and are now lying in the meadow digesting their food. This digestive process of a herd of cows is indeed a marvelous thing. In the cow, a kind of image of the whole world is present. The cow digests her food. The digested foodstuffs pass over into the blood vessels and lymphatic vessels. And during this whole process of digestion and nourishment, the cow has a sensation of well-being, which is at the same time knowledge. During the process of digestion, every cow has a wonderful aura in which the whole world is mirrored. It is the most beautiful thing one can see, a herd of cows lying in the meadow digesting their food. And in this process of digestion, comprehending the whole world. With us human beings, all of this has sunk into the subconscious, so that the head can reflect what the body works out and sees revealed as knowledge. We are really in a bad way, we human beings, because the head does not allow us to experience the lovely things that the cows, for example, experience. We should know much more of the world if we could experience the digestive process, for instance. We should then, of course, have to experience it with the feeling of knowledge, not with the feeling that humans have when they remain in the subconscious in their digestive process. This is simply to make clear what I want to say. I do not wish to imply that we now have to raise the process of digestion into consciousness in our teaching, but I want to show that there is something that should really be present in the child at a higher stage, this feeling of well-being at the inward flow of sound. Imagine what would happen if the violin could feel what is going on within it. We only listen to the violin. It is outside us. We are ignorant of the whole origin of the sound and only hear the inward sense picture of it. But if the violin could feel how each string vibrates with the next one, it would have the most blissful experiences. Provided, of course, that the music is good. So you must let the child have these little experiences of ecstasy, so that you really call forth a feeling for music in the whole organism, and you must yourself find joy in it. Of course, one must understand something of the music, but an essential part of teaching is this artistic element of which I have just spoken. On this account, it is essential for the inner processes of life between the change of teeth and puberty demand it, to give the child lessons in music right from the very beginning, and at first as far as possible to accustom them to sing little songs, quite empirically, without any kind of theory. Nothing more than simply singing little songs, but they must be well sung. Then you can use the simpler songs, from which the children can gradually learn what melody, rhythm, and beat are, and so on. But first you must accustom the children to sing little songs as a whole, and to play a little, too, as far as that is possible. Unless there is clearly no bent at all in this direction, every Waldorf child begins to learn some instrument on entering school. As I say, as far as circumstances allow, each child should learn to play an instrument. As early as possible, the children should come to feel what it means for their own musical being to flow over into the objective instrument, for which purpose the piano, which should really only be a kind of memorizing instrument, is of course the worst possible thing for the child. Another kind of instrument should be chosen, and if possible, one that can be blown upon. Here one must, of course, have a great deal of artistic tact, and I was going to say a great deal of authority, too. If you can, you should choose a wind instrument, as the children will learn most from this, and will thereby gradually come to understand music. Admittedly, it can be a hair-raising experience when the children begin to blow, but on the other hand, it is a wonderful thing in the child's life when this whole configuration of the air, which otherwise is enclosed and held along the nerve fibers, can now be extended and guided. The human being feels the whole organism being enlarged. Processes that are otherwise only within the organism are carried over into the outside world. A similar thing happens when the child learns the violin, when the actual processes, the music that is within, is directly carried over, and the child feels how the music within passes over into the strings through the bow. But remember, you should begin giving these music and singing lessons as early as possible. For it is of very great importance that you not only make all your teaching artistic, but that you also begin teaching the more specifically artistic subjects, painting, modeling, and music, as soon as the children come to school, and that you see to it that the children really come to possess all these things as an inward treasure. In the life of the child, the point of time that falls between the 9th and 10th year must be very specially kept in mind in the teaching of languages. I have characterized for you this turning point between the 9th and 10th year as the time when children first learn to differentiate between themselves and the environment. Up to this time, they have been as one. I have already indicated the right method of teaching for children entering school. But they really should not come to school before the change of teeth. We might say that fundamentally any kind of school teaching before this time is wrong. If we were forced to it by law, we must do it. But it is not the right thing from the point of view of artistic education. In a true art of education, children should not enter school until the change of teeth. Our first task, as I have shown you, is to begin with something artistic, and work out the forms of the letters through art. You should begin with some independent form of art, as I have explained to you, and treat everything that has to do with nature in the mood and fashion of fairy tales, legends, and myths, in the way I have described. But for teaching languages, it is specially important to consider this period between the 9th and 10th year. Before this time, language teaching must under no circumstances be of an intellectual nature. That is to say, it must not include any grammar or syntax. Up to the 9th or 10th year, children must learn to speak the foreign language just as they acquire any other habit. Only when they learn to differentiate between the self and the environment can they begin to examine what they themselves bring forth in their speech. It is only then that you can begin to speak of noun, adjective, verb, and so on, not before. Before this time, the child should simply speak and be kept to this speaking. We have a good opportunity for carrying this out in the Waldorf school, because from the beginning of school life, the child learns 2 foreign languages besides the mother tongue. The children come to school and begin with main lessons in periods, as I have already described. They have the main lesson for the early part of the morning, and then directly after that, the little ones have a lesson which, for German children, is either English or French. In these language lessons, we try not to consider the relationship of one language to the other. Up until the point of time I have described to you, between the 9th and 10th year, we disregard the fact that a table, for instance, is called Tisch in German and table in English, that to eat is Essen in German and eat in English. We connect each language not with the words of another language, but directly with the objects. The child learns to call the ceiling, the lamp, the chair by their names, whether it is in French or in English. Thus, from the 7th to the 9th year, we should not attach importance to translation, that is to say, rendering a word in one language by a word in another. But the children simply learn to speak in the language, connecting their words with the external objects. Thus the children do not need to know, or rather do not need to think, of the fact that when they say table in English, it is called Tisch in German, and so on. They do not concern themselves with this at all. This does not occur to the children, for they have not been taught to compare the languages in any way. In this manner, the child learns every language out of the element from which it stems, namely the element of feeling. Now, a language consists, of course, of sounds, and is either the expression of the soul from within, in which case there is a vowel, or else it is the expression of something external, and then there is a consonant. But you must feel this first of all. You will not, of course, pass on to the children exactly what I am saying here. But in the course of your lesson, they should actually experience the vowel as something connected with feeling, and the consonant as a copy of something in the outside world. This will happen as a matter of course, for it is part of human nature, and we must not drive out this impulse, but rather lead on from it. For let us think, what is the vowel ah? This does not belong to the lesson, but is only something you ought to know. What is ah? When the sun rises, I stand in admiration before it. Ah. Ah is always the expression of astonishment, wonder. Or again, a fly settles on my forehead. I say, A. That is the expression of warding off, doing away with. A. The English sounds are somewhat differently connected with our feelings, but in every language, English included, we find that the vowel ah expresses astonishment and wonder. Now let us take a characteristic word, roll, the rolling of a ball, for instance. Here you have the R. Who could help feeling that with the R and the L together, the ball rolls on? And there's a drawing. R alone would be like this. Second drawing. RL goes on. L always implies a flowing on. Here you have an external process imitated in the consonant. And there's a third drawing. So, the whole language is built up in the vowels out of a feeling of inner astonishment, wonder, self-defense, self-assertion, and so on, or out of a feeling of imitation, in the case of the consonants. We must not drive these feelings out of the children. The children should learn to develop the sounds from the external objects, and from the way their own feelings are related to them. Everything should be derived from the feeling for language. In the word roll, the child should really feel R-O-L-L. It is the same thing for every word. This has been completely lost for modern civilized people. They think of the word simply as something written down or something abstract. People can no longer really feel their way into language. Look how all primitive languages still have feeling within them. The most civilized languages make speech an abstract thing. Look at your own English language, how the second half of the word is cast aside, and one skips over the real feeling of the sounds. But the child must dwell in this feeling for language. This must be cultivated by examining characteristic words in which such a feeling plays. Now, in German, we call what one has up here Kopf. In English it is called head, in Italian testa. With the abstract kind of relationship to language that people usually have today, what do they say about this? They say in German the word is Kopf, in Italian testa, in English head. But all this is absolutely untrue. The whole thing is nonsense. For let us think. Kopf, what is that? Kopf is what is formed, something that has a rounded form. The form is expressed when you say Kopf. When you say testa, you have it in the word testament and testify. Then you are expressing the fact that the head establishes or confirms something. Here you are expressing something quite different. You say of that organ that sits up there, that is the establisher, the testator, testa. Now, in English, one holds the opinion that the head is the most important part of the human being, although you know, of course, that this opinion is not quite correct. So in English you say head, that is, the most important thing, the goal of all things, the aim and meeting place of all. Thus different things are expressed in the different languages. If people wanted to designate the same thing, then the Englishman and the Italian too would say Kopf, but they do not designate the same thing. In the primeval human language, the same thing was expressed everywhere, so that this primeval language was the same for all. Then people began to separate and to express things differently. That is how the different words came about. When you designate such different things as though they were the same, you no longer feel what is contained in them, and it is very important not to drive out this feeling for language. It must be kept alive, and for this reason you must not analyze language before the 9th or 10th year. Only then can you pass on to what a noun, a verb, or an adjective is, and so on. This should not be done before the 9th or 10th year. Otherwise you will be speaking of things that are so closely connected with the children's own selves that they cannot understand it yet, because they cannot distinguish themselves from their environment. It is most important to bear in mind that we must not allow any grammar or comparison of languages before the 9th or 10th year. Then what the children get from speaking will be similar to what they get from singing. I have tried to illustrate this inner joy in singing by picturing to you the inner feeling of pleasure that rises up out of the digestive organs of the cows in the meadow when they are digesting their food. There must be present an inner feeling of joy of this kind, or at least some feeling contained in a word, that they feel the inward rolling. Language must be inwardly experienced, and not only thought out with the head. Today you find that people mostly think language with their head. Therefore, when they want to find the right word in translating from one language to another, they take a dictionary. Here the words are so put together that you find testa or Kopf, and people imagine that is all the same. But it is not all the same. A different conception is expressed in each word, something that can only be expressed out of feeling. We must take this into account in language teaching. And another element comes in here, something that belongs to the spirit. When human beings die, or before they come down to earth, they have no possibility of understanding the so-called substantives, for example. Those whom we call the dead know nothing about substantives. They know nothing of the naming of objects, but they still have some knowledge of qualities, and it is therefore possible to communicate with the dead about qualities. But in the further course of the life after death, that soon ceases also. What lasts longest is an understanding of verbs, words of action, active and passive expressions, and longest of all the expression of sensations. Oh, ah, e, a. These interjectional expressions are preserved longest of all by the dead. From this you can see how vital it is that the human soul have a living experience of interjections if it is not to become entirely unspiritual. All interjections are actually vowels. And the consonants, which as such are in any case very soon lost after death, and were not present before the descent to earth, are copies of the external world. This we should really experience in our feeling, be aware of it in the child, and see that we do not drive it out by giving lessons on nouns, adjectives, and so on, too early, but wait with these until the 9th or 10th year. From the first class of the Waldorf School, upward, we have introduced eurythmy, this visible speech, in which, by carrying out certain movements, either alone or in groups, the human being actually reveals itself, just as it reveals itself through speech. Now, if there is the right treatment in the language lessons, that is to say, if the teacher does not ruin the child's feeling for language, but rather cherishes it, then the child will feel the transition to eurythmy to be a perfectly natural one, just as the very little child feels that learning to speak is also a perfectly natural process. You will not have the slightest difficulty in bringing eurythmy to the children. If they are healthily developed children, they will want it. You will always discover something that is pathologically wrong with children who do not wish to do eurythmy. They want it as a matter of course, just as when they were quite little children, they wanted to learn to speak, if all their organs were sound. That is because the child feels a very strong impulse to express its inward experiences as activities of will in its own body. This can be seen in the very early years, when the child begins to laugh and cry, and in the various ways in which feelings are expressed in the face. It would have to be a very metaphorical way of speaking if you were to say that a dog or any other animal laughs. In any case, it does not laugh in the same way the human being does. Neither does it cry in the same way. Indeed, in the animal, all gestures and movements that carry over inward experience into the element of will are quite different. There is a great difference between animal and human in this respect. What is expressed in eurythmy rests upon laws, just as language does. Speaking is not an arbitrary thing. With a word like water, for instance, you cannot say Wunder or anything like that. Speech has laws, and so has eurythmy. In the ordinary movements of the body, the human being is in a sense free, although many things are done out of a certain instinct. When I cogitate about something, I put my finger to my forehead. When I want to show that something is not true, I shake my head and my hand as if to erase it. But eurythmy leads inward and outward experiences over into ordered movements, just as speech leads an inward experience over into the sound. This is what eurythmy is, and the child wants to learn it. For this reason, the fact that eurythmy is not yet taught in modern education proves that there is no thought of drawing forth the human faculties out of the very nature of the human being. For if you do that, then you must come to eurythmy in the natural course of things. This will not mean any interference with gymnastics, the teaching of physical exercises. This is something quite different, and the teacher and educator must recognize the difference. Gymnastics, as taught today, and all kinds of sports, are something quite different from eurythmy. You can quite well have both together. For the conception of space is very often considered in quite an abstract way, and people do not take into account that space is something concrete. For people have become so accustomed to think of the earth as round that when someone who lives in this part of the world makes a jump, he says he jumps up. But when someone in the antipodes, who has his legs down here and his head up there, jumps, he jumps down, or so we imagine. But this is not anything we can experience. I once read a book on natural philosophy in which the author tried to ridicule the idea that the sky must be below. But the truth is far richer than that. We do not make judgments about the world and about space in such a way that we leave ourselves out of it altogether and simply consider space by itself as something abstract. There are certain philosophers who do this, Hume and Mill and Kant, but this is all untrue. It is really all nonsense. Space is something concrete of which the human being is aware. We each feel ourselves within space and feel the necessity of finding our space in it. When we find our way into the balance of space, into the different conditions of space, then sports and gymnastics arise. With these efforts, the human being tries to develop a personal relationship to space. If you do this gymnastic movement, arms outstretched, you have the feeling that you are bringing your two arms into a horizontal position, direction. If you jump, you have the feeling that you are moving your body upward by its own force. These are gymnastic exercises. But if you feel you are holding within you something that you are experiencing inwardly, the sound E, and you reflect upon it, then you may make perhaps a similar movement. But in this case, the inner soul quality is expressed in the movement. A person's inward self is revealed. This is what happens in eurythmy, which is the revelation of the inner self. Eurythmy expresses the human experience of breathing and of blood circulation when they come into the realm of the soul. In gymnastics and in sports, we feel space as if it were a framework filled with all sorts of lines and directions into which we spring and which we follow, and the apparatus is made accordingly. We climb a ladder or pull ourselves up on a rope. Here we are acting in accordance with external space. That is the difference between gymnastics and eurythmy. Eurythmy lets the soul life flow outward, and thereby becomes a real expression of the human being, like language. Eurythmy is visible speech. Gymnastics and sports are a way for human beings to fit themselves into external space, adapt themselves to the world. Experiment to see whether one fits in with the world in this way or in that. That is not language. That is not a revelation of the human being, but rather a demand the world makes upon human beings so that they should be fit for the world and be able to find their way into it. This difference must be noticed. It expresses itself in the fact that the gymnastics teacher makes the children do movements whereby they may adapt themselves to the outside world. The eurythmy teacher expresses what is the inner nature of the human being. We must feel this. We must be aware of it. Then eurythmy, gymnastics, and games, too, if you like, will all take their right place in our teaching. We will speak further of this tomorrow. The end of Lecture 6.